and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris, and you're watching Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. My guest today is Dato' Zaid Ibrahim. He is former minister in the Prime Minister's Department for Legal Affairs and Judicial Reform under Tun Abdullah Badawi's administration. That was in 2008. And more recently, he was on the legal team representing Najib Razak at the federal court for the final appeal against his SRC international conviction. Zaid, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I appreciate your time being here. I want to begin our conversation. I mean, I'm sure it's been a very eventful few weeks for you, but I think for many of our audience at home, they're quite curious to know why you decided to take the case in the first place.
Yes. As lawyers, just like doctors, we don't choose our client really. So long as we think we can do something for them. If it's a doctor, it's because he thinks he can cure them. Mm. If it's a lawyer, if he thinks he can secure liberty for them. So when you're faced with that sort of situation, and this is what we were faced with, you know, when Dato' Sri Najib sought my advice. So I told him that we should get a new perspective to the case, we should try a new approach, because it was last leg for him. Mm. You know, he lost at the High Court, he lost at the Court of Appeal. And together with some friends from overseas, we advised him that this new approach should be taken. And of course, he took a while to decide, and it's perfectly understandable because he was with Tan Sri Shafi for many years. Mm. Doing all these cases, to make the decision to depart from from that comfort level, it's not easy, you know. So, but he decided ultimately.
Okay.
And when he said that, yes, please proceed, that's how we took up the case.
But for you personally, because you have been very vocal in your criticism, very public, very vocal in your criticism against Najib in the past, what was that shift? And I'm trying to understand, because I understand that as a journalist, you know, for me as a journalist, I don't necessarily have to agree with or even like the people I interview, but it is my job to do so. I understand that for lawyers, it would be your ethical duty to ensure that you would represent your client to the best of your ability. However, with Najib Razak specifically, and given your very public criticism of him, how then do you reconcile that with your quest to secure liberty for him, as you said earlier?
Well, you must look at the time frame. Sometimes you form an opinion. You form opinion based on what you read, the people you're with. I was in Pakatan. I was listening a lot to Mahathir Mohamad, Dr. Mahathir, and the DAP people. I was reading a lot of the newspapers. Were very much, who has already decided, as way back in 2018, Najib is guilty. And likewise, I was of the opinion from what I read that, yeah, I think there's something's not right about this $1 billion or couple of $1 billion missing from the coffers of the country. So I criticized him publicly. Mm-hmm. I was even charged for that, you know. I was charged for insulting the Prime Minister in 2015. And it took me 4 years to clear my name, you know. But after his SRC trial, after I listened to the evidence and the way that it was done, I felt there was something fundamentally wrong here, you know. And the main issue with me, without going into the merit of the whole case, is just that I felt that the trial judge was in serious conflict. He was in serious conflict. He was in a position of bias because of his deep involvement in Maybank. Not as an officer, as a top general counsel, he was involved in a lot of things about 1MDB, the loans to 1MDB, the default by 1MDB. He was privy to all that, but he did not recuse himself. So in my book, you cannot judge a case when you have that kind of involvement.
Okay.
And that's why my view that there's a miscarriage of justice. That's how it started.
So that was how you came to be involved with his legal representation?
No. It was just an opinion. I changed my mind. Right. And then when he lost the High Court, and then he lost in the Court of Appeal, I then proposed to him that perhaps we should take some other view, the position taken. We reset the whole argument. We refocus the case. Bring some experts from overseas to advise you. I'm not a great lawyer myself, but there are others that we can, you know, use their knowledge about the law, about justice. And we all unanimously agree that he should take this new position.
Okay, all
right. Which is to focus on conflict and to try and bring new evidence, which we thought, with due respect, I think the federal court should have allowed us.
Okay, so this new strategy, this new legal strategy that you convinced Najib to take, does he blame you for convincing him to use this new strategy and ultimately be unsuccessful at the appeal over it?
No. Najib is a gentleman. He wouldn't do that. He knew that we were working very hard, you know, breaking our back in that 8 weeks or 6 weeks we were doing the case. We were going through 30,000 pages of documents.
Right.
We were going through all sorts of things, you know. And we thought that we believed that we should get an adjournment, reasonable time, to argue the main appeal, because we thought initially that we would win the additional evidence part, which if we had won that, the matter would have been remitted to the High Court and they would hear the new evidence, whether it's relevant. But the federal court said, no. We are deciding now. It's not relevant. We don't have to bring it.
Okay.
So because of that, they said, then you can start with the appeal now of the main appeal proper.
Mm-hmm.
And the lead counsel, Hisham, said he can't do it.
That was when you applied for the adjournment, for the postponement.
Yes.
Did you decide to take the case so close to the hearing under the assumption that you would be granted an adjournment?
First place, on the date that was set for the hearing, we were prepared to argue on the evidence, the new evidence. We were prepared to argue that case, and we thought that if we were of the opinion that we would get that. If we got that order to have the new evidence heard before another judge, we would have time to prepare for the main appeal. But of course, we didn't expect that sort of very swift decision.
So what I'm trying to understand is, how was that decision not expected? The decision for the federal court to say to continue the hearing, because according to the timeline, I think it was when Najib appointed the new team in July, on the 25th of July. That was just 21 days before the hearing was set to start. New lawyers had then requested for an adjournment then, which was denied because the federal court said they wanted to start on the 15th of August as requested. So the first time it was already denied. I would have thought that you had seen this coming the second time.
No, it was denied in respect of the main appeal. But we thought that our application to adduce new evidence would be successful.
Okay.
And it is not unreasonable to expect that.
It's not unreasonable to expect an adjournment.
No, because we have
it's the discretion of the court.
No, because we have strong new evidence. I think justice would have required the court to allow us to at least produce the evidence. But they said no. And that was unexpected.
Why didn't Hisham make any oral submissions?
He was not ready.
Is it better to not make any oral submissions?
No, because the fundamental right of the accused person has been denied. An accused person under Article 5 says you must have effective counsel. You are entitled to an effective counsel. So we never lawyers ask for postponement all the time. You see, it's easy for people at the top to pontificate about ethics, morality, but we at the ground, we know what life is about. You know, the difficulties of accused person, the problems they face. And therefore, you have to look at each particular case on its merit. You cannot have a general rule that says, okay, we are not going to postpone, regardless. I think that's wrong.
Okay.
It's harsh.
Right.
I thought that the idea of reasonableness or fairness, I thought it's the same for those in the dock and those upstairs.
Okay.
Surely that is not true.
I'm going to get you to expand on that, but I want to tread carefully here because I don't have any legal training. I don't quite understand where the parameters are, but I'm very curious to know what you mean when you say that it was a, quote, unusual legal process questioning Putrajaya's decision to allow leeway in certain cases. You cited the Nicky Liao case and then the Vincent Tan's son's case as well.
No, it is a question. It's not just the court. The whole criminal justice system must operate on the same formula.
What did you mean by that? I'm trying to understand where is the double standard?
The double standard is that the prosecution should have supported our request.
The prosecution, the Attorney General's office should have given discretion or in your opinion?
No, should have supported
opinion.
Us because we are making legitimate requests. As lawyers, they should know. And if they can grant discretionary, wide discretions, so generous to all those cases I cited, why can't they do this for...
Why do you think they didn't?
No, because you cannot question the Attorney General. So I don't know. You have to ask him. You have to ask the government. I don't know because he's advisor to the Prime Minister. I don't know. But I think if you want to exercise discretion, you have to exercise it fairly. You know, there's no such thing as absolute discretion. There's no such thing. Although this is how we live today.
What do you make of Dr. Azalina Uthman's comment about, she gave this not so veiled swipe at the Prime Minister, at her boss, I might add. you know, she said that Ismail Sabri should have appointed his own people to be an Attorney General. What do you make of that?
You have to ask her, you've got to call
but
her.
What, do you agree
well,
with that
I
statement?
Think because in this country, everybody knows, even Tommy Thomas accepted that, there is selective prosecution. Selective prosecution means sometimes I charge you for the same thing, but I would not charge him because it's my discretion. But selective prosecution goes against the grain of everyone has equal protection under the law. But in this country, you cannot question the Attorney General's decision. I charge you, but I let you go. So others get charged or in a criminal case, the others, friends of yours, will get a compound of, for the offence.
So. Do I understand this correctly, that you lay the blame for the denial of the postponement at the feet of the Attorney General, at the prosecution's feet?
No, I blame. I don't blame. I don't want to sit here to blame anybody.
Okay. So
I just feel it's wrong.
You feel it's wrong?
I feel it's wrong to deny us a short adjournment without asking why. Is it, does the court make a finding that this was all the rules? Is this that it was evidence that Zaid and Shafi Pakat, you know, the gang up to get a postponement for Niger? Did anybody ask us?
That was what it looked like on the surface.
Yes,
right?
But this country, this is the problem. Everybody makes judgment on the surface. You know, because we are so politicized, you know. Because social media, as like I said, those people who make judgment on Najib, very happy with this decision. But if I had, hypothetically, been involved in a case involving, say, a leader of the opposition or some people from DAP, they will cry, they will say, my blue murder, they will cry blue murder. You know, they say, why can't you get a decent postponement?
You think your treatment in the public eye would have been different if you were representing...
Of course, because...
Anwar Ibrahim or...
No, of course, they are popular people.
Okay.
Najib is not so popular now amongst this group, this group who manage the social media very well. So if I had represented a different client, I'm sure the outcome would be different for me. Now they accuse me of trying to, you know, take advantage of the situation, trying to make money. I have no basis. The Bar Council probably is going to take action against me for disciplinary improper conduct, you know. The Bar Council president spoke clearly, you know, kind of alleging that I was motivated by improper consideration. So I had to take all that. Well, I'm just defending a client.
Okay.
You know?
All right. We're going to take a quick break, Zaid. We'll come back and continue this conversation in just a couple minutes with Dr. Zaid Ibrahim. Stay tuned to Consider This. Thanks so much for staying with me on Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. My guest today is Dato' Zaid Ibrahim. He was one of the lawyers who was in Najib Razak's legal team in the unsuccessful appeal in the SRC, final SRC case in the federal court. So let's talk a little bit about what's happened in the last weekend at the UMNO special meeting. Why were you there?
Oh, why? I think they like me now. I don't know. I had I did a video as a present to my friends in UMNO.
As a present to your friends in UMNO?
Yeah.
Why do they need a present?
Because they were gathered there for, I thought, some very useful, very...
To support Najib's
to support. No, no, no. Not
release?
To support justice. They wanted a fair trial. We know that. So I thought I should give my 2 cents for them. So I did a video the night before. I just put it on YouTube. I just put it on
Facebook.
But somehow, well received. And that's obviously, because they invited me the next morning to come.
Okay.
So I came and be a spectator.
Your presence there means that you are now affiliated with the party. Are you an UMNO member now?
Yes. I'm a member of UMNO. It's a wonderful present for me, Merdeka. So now I can start again my political career, my political pursuit, and I want to end successfully with UMNO and Barisan Nasional.
You started your political career with UMNO. In year 2000, became Kota Baru UMNO Division Chief, and then from there moved on to PKR for a short while. So after PKR launched Parti Kita, after Parti Kita moved on to DAP, and now we've come full circle again with UMNO. Help me understand why you think the UMNO of today is different from the UMNO of 2008 when you left.
No, I didn't leave in 2008. Okay. I was sacked.
You were sacked in UMNO. But you essentially parted ways with the party, right?
You see, I've always been true. I may move from place to place. I may gravitate from party A, party B, party C. But I never waver. My pivot is always about right and wrong, about justice, about the rule of law. And in the course of the pursuit of that dream, I was looking for a political platform that suits me.
And UMNO suits the rule of law and
now,
justice?
Yes. Wait a minute. Let me explain.
Sure.
Because I was with them for many years. There were many good things that they did. Of course, there were excesses as well. And that's why I had problem with them. You know, I had problem about my advocacy for removing ISA for many years, and which, of course, finally, Dato' Sri Najib removed the ISA. I was very much against their Ketuanan Melayu, you know, this Malay superiority entitlement policy. This is Mahathir's doing. I thought that would be not good for the Malays because that will not make them competitive. And once you have a sense of entitlement, you're not going to be good for the nation building because you're going to discriminate against others. So there were a lot of issues in UMNO. I was against Hudud, the only UMNO fellow who spoke about it, you know, at the expense almost of my own election, because Muslims don't like people who don't like Hudud. But I wasn't going on the religious ground, I was going on constitutional ground. So there were many things that I always strive for, and I was still the same. I think the situation in the country now has gone back to worse. We are so polarized. People don't talk anymore. People just use hate. People just use social media. People make judgments without really knowing what it's all about. And we are going further and further. And the politicians are busy trying to get into the action without really offering anything substantial. So I hope, I may be wrong, I hope that the reason UMNO invited me now is probably because they see that there is room for people like me. Otherwise, they wouldn't have. But I will not change. You know, I believe in this principle. I believe that consensus politics is necessary in this country. It has to be, of course, led by a strong Malay party, because this is the nature of the country. But non-Malays, non-Muslims, whatever ethnic groups you have, it has to be part of that consensus building process. And I think UMNO is the only one that can lead. Because I've gone through all that. Those groups like Pakatan Harapan, you know, they talk nice, you know. The articulation is good, but they don't really. In the 2 years they're in power, what reform?
How would you respond to those who accuse you of being politically promiscuous, that you have no true allegiance? How can UMNO take you seriously if you have been around the block with all the political parties?
That's why I'm special. Because I am not the ordinary politician in this country who's happy to be a hypocrite, who says one thing but do another. I won't do that. You know, I believe in the issues and the principles that I subscribe to. And I stand by that. You know, so if a political party feels that there is some value in me, they can accept me. When I was in Pakatan, they can complain about this and that. What did they offer me to do? What responsibility do they give me? Nothing.
Would you consider the role of being a bridge between Pakatan Harapan and Barisan Nasional?
No, I'll be a bridge to the people of this country. I think the political schisms in this country, it's beyond one man's job. But I would like to get the people to believe that there is nothing that you cannot resolve by dialogue, by consensus. Okay. There is no need to using a broad brush and say, oh, you are this, you are lazy, you are racist, you are this. This generates hatred and suspicion. There is not enough goodwill. There's not enough leaders who say, okay, you are right, even though you're on the other side.
Is Ismail Sabri one of those leaders that fit that description? Is Zaid Hamidi one of those leaders that fit that description? I'm wondering.
I think the collective UMNO leadership now is a lot more open than before. Yes. You must remember, UMNO is run by Dr. Mahathir for 23 years. So the philosophy, when people judge UMNO, you must remember that. There's a very short period of everybody else. When Dato' Sri Najib wanted to introduce One Malaysia, for example, he didn't get much attraction really because of Mahathir's, of course, using all his might to upset and to defeat Najib's plan. There's a lot of things. So in other words, UMNO hasn't really got a chance to rise again, to rejuvenate itself. So I think we should try.
Well, you have called for, you essentially, you know, gave this rallying call of UMNO should survive, UMNO should win the next general elections. Given the sentiment within UMNO against Ismail Sabri Yaakob at the moment, does your support with UMNO also mean that you support Zaid Hamidi as being prime minister?
No. Those are political appointments, and who is the prime minister, I don't really want to get involved. I mean, I'm still new anyway. I want UMNO because I feel that they can provide that solidarity. They can provide that energy and the strength to bring everybody else on board and institute real reform in this country. Because if you bring the splinter group who talks about reform, they can't do it. When they are in power, they're helpless. Mm. They're helpless to take it up to the real implementation stage. You see, it's not just about talk. It's not about just what's your ideology. It's about implementation and getting through. I believe UMNO has the strength, and I hope they win, so that we can start again. I mean, Tunku did it. I think somebody else should do it again, post Mahathir.
Okay, in the couple of minutes that we have left, I do want to ask you about where you see the future of Najib Razak. Do you see him receiving a royal pardon? You wrote the book Ampun Tuanku, I think about 10 years ago. In your professional view, do you think that this is a likelihood for Najib Razak?
No, I think this is again, you see. You know, Melissa, already we have petitions online. Shouldn't give him. Shouldn't give Najib.
Well, petitions on both sides.
It's both sides are wrong. There's no need to pressure the king. You must respect the monarch. But do you know more than the monarch? You're more honourable. Huh? Let him decide. Personally, you ask me whether he should. Of course he should. Because there's a miscarriage of justice as far as I'm concerned. He did not get a fair trial. That's all I say. You don't have to agree with me. But I leave it to the king. I'm not going to petition anyone. You know, I cannot be so presumptuous that I know everything, that the wisdom is the monopoly of this person alone. Leave it to the monarch. Let him decide. If he gives a pardon, then he walks up. If he doesn't, he stays there.
Okay.
And we have to start again.
All right. I want to thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I appreciate your time. And I want to wish you happy Merdeka. Thank you for spending your Merdeka night, Merdeka evening with us.
Thank you very much.
That's all we have on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.